This is Piedmont Arts. In the summer of 1965, a theater arts major from Carnegie Mellon University named Constance Welsh staged a play called Time of Harvest, the first production put on by the new Davidson Community Players. The drama teacher, director, and actress would go on to produce one to two plays every summer with casts of college and town residents, primarily in Hodson Hall on the Davidson College campus. 61 years after that first production, the Davidson Community Players are still going strong and getting stronger. I'm Phil Vavra, and on this episode, I'll be speaking with the DCP's executive director, Steve Kaliski, about where the organization has been, where it's headed, and about some of the exciting productions on their calendar this year, including Evita. Then Rachel Stewart talks with soprano Karen Slack about her concert, African Queens, which Piedmont Opera is presenting in Winston-Salem. And we have a new edition of Fanfare to fill you in on even more upcoming events and activities. Thanks for listening. Steve Kaliski is a graduate of Davidson College and an experienced New York director, actor, and producer who took over as executive director of the Davidson Community Players in 2023. DCP recently presented productions of the plays The Lifespan of a Fact and Actually at the Armour Street Theater in Davidson. Looking ahead to this summer, they'll be staging some shows in larger venues, and we're going to get to that. Steve, thanks for joining me.
Thanks so much for having me. Glad to be here.
Davidson Community Players have been around since the mid-1960s.
That's right.
What can you tell me about the organization's history, and when did you first become involved with them?
Yeah, we have been very agile over the years. I would say that one of the signature aspects of Davidson Community Players, as you're looking at it decade by decade, is one iteration is somewhat unrecognizable from the next. And I think that's part of how arts companies can adapt and endure to whatever moments they face. It sort of started as an experimental theater company that grew out of the college theater department with some avant-garde music and theater hybrids over at the old Hodson Hall on campus, which is currently the Cunningham Theater Center. And then when the Duke Family Performance Hall arrived in the early 2000s, that was one of the big leaps forward for DCP, being able to do large-scale musicals. And then we got Armour Street Theater under our portfolio of venues 2007, and that enabled us to kind of have an ongoing playhouse where we could actually, you know, outside of summers, do anything from, you know, recent off-Broadway plays, more intimate things, do some more expanded children's programming there as well. So we keep changing and iterating. We've got Kane Center for the Arts now in Cornelius, which has been a huge asset to us and will be a big part of our summer program.
Now, as the Davidson Community Players grew, what sorts of challenges arose from that growth, and how were they met?
One of the biggest challenges, especially in an era of Google Maps, is that we don't really have a location. I think if you're going online, you're like, where is Davidson Community Players? Where can I swing by? We are fairly nomadic, and we still are, in that we are at Armour Street Theater. We have our co-working spaces at the Hurt Hub. We produce at Duke Family Performance Hall. We produce at Kane Center for the Arts. We have a studio rehearsal space and scene shop in Cornelius. We're in town buildings for summer camp. So we are all over the place. I think that is occasionally a challenge when patrons are like, where can I swing by and talk to the staff? But it can also be a virtue in that we are able to adapt any kind of programming because, you know, we have every size or kind of amenitied space that we could ask for as an organization. So it's a glass half empty, glass half full, depending on the day.
Okay, I'm a little surprised by the answer because I had a chance to see The Lifespan of a Fact at the Armour Street Theater this spring. Really enjoyed the production and the space. Converted church.
It is, right? A converted church,
in
yes.
A residential neighborhood. It's just sort of, you could walk by it and almost not see it until the banners are out front for the next show. But that is your first permanent home.
Yes, and it's still not a building we own. The town of Davidson owns that building. We are actually developing some plans right now to acquire it from the town and hopefully do some renovations. That's kind of our long-term capital project that's still in its early phases. But if we were to acquire that from the town, that would be our first true space that we own, which for theater organizations, especially with Charlotte theater organizations' histories, that would be a huge step forward to have a space that was truly ours.
Well, for listeners who aren't familiar with it, it's not a big space,
no.
But I mean that in the best possible sense.
Oh, it's intimate. Yeah.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
And really impressive what your team is able to make happen inside that small space.
Yeah, it can be completely transformative. Our patrons love it. It's got sort of the charm of an East Village, if you've seen off Broadway shows in New York, of the kind of walking into a little black box theater, just which you think is nothing bigger than a closet. You walk in and you can have this incredible theater magic that emerges from nowhere.
You're almost part of the show.
Yeah,
when
exactly.
You're sitting in the audience.
Yes, you can't make too many facial expressions if you're not enjoying it.
Well, this summer you have three productions at some of the other venues you mentioned, larger venues.
Yeah.
Let's start with Evita.
Sure.
At the Duke Family Performance Hall on the Davidson College campus, and that's going to run June 17th through the 28th.
That's right, yes. So this is a big, big undertaking for us. I actually was an assistant director on the 2011-2012 Broadway revival of Evita. So in my New York life, I really grew to love this musical as it's kind of one of the great modern operas. It's a very intricate for a piece of musical theater, and it is a very rich text as you're looking at a political figure in Argentina who transitioned from celebrity into politics. There's lots of parallels we might be able to draw there. And it's also just got one of the most hummable, lushly memorable scores. So big undertaking for us. I'm directing it, and I couldn't be more excited. Rehearsals are well underway, and we're looking forward.
What's the ratio of musicals to non-musicals that Davidson Community Players put on?
Yeah, it's about half and half.
Yeah.
And another way to divide half and half is between material that's oriented towards adults and material for youth. So we might have a youth play, a youth musical, but it's part of our mission as a community theater to be able to provide not just for the actors and artists in the area a diversity of works, but for our audiences, because some folks like A Lifespan of a Fact, some folks prefer Evita. Some of them like both, but we just want to make sure we have something for everybody.
You're leading me right into my next question. A fun show being put on by the Connie Company, which is the youth-oriented right. branch mm-hmm. of DCP. Rock of Ages, that'll be at the Kane Center for the Arts in Cornelius, July 28th through August 1st. Tell me about the Connie Company.
Right. The Connie Company is named for our founder, Constance Welsh, who was a huge advocate for theater education. And we've continued that tradition, again, in many iterations over the years. But whenever we do something that is by or for youth, it kind of falls under our Connie Company branch. So this program that our education director, Katie Mullis, has developed over the years called TS3, which really stands for Teen Summer Stock Series. That has evolved into one of our signature programs. And really the premise is that a group of teenagers and college students who maybe are all back in town for the summer and miss each other and they want to, get together and do a play. They'll get together with a professional production team, and over the course of just 2 or maybe 2.5 weeks of rehearsal, they do an entire Broadway-scale musical.
That's all?
That's it, yeah. If you were to go by rehearsals during those days, everyone is sweating, working hard. There's blocking that is happening the day of the show because they haven't gotten to everything yet. But one of the pieces of magic about this is we don't go out to the audience and say, all right, everybody, you're about to see a very compromised version of this because we haven't had a chance to work on it, really. It's for the audience. It doesn't make a difference. They see something that is really professional in scale, and we live in an area with immense youth talent with all of the wonderful high schools and performing arts schools in the area, so we can kind of benefit from that with this gathering of the all-stars over the summer to do a big musical.
And are there opportunities for younger kids, summer camps, classes,
yeah.
even during the school year?
Yeah, well, we do both. So summer camps are one of our biggest programs, and we run those June through August. And this summer, I think we've got about 31 camps. And those are a mix of, it could be half a day for 1 week for ages 4 and 5. That's just a basic introduction to theater arts or imaginative exercises, something that's loosely based on you know, can they sing a song together? Can they tell a story together? That's where it starts. And we really like to think, you know, DCP can be a lifelong home for you in the arts. You begin at age 4. And then as the ages of the camps get older, we have starting to get into specific performance technique classes. And much like this TS3 program, the chance to be in a full-scale show over the summer. Again, in that two-week model where week one of camp, you rehearse. Week two of the camp, you load into the theater. Last day of camp, your parents and friends all come and we put on a show. So we're doing a whole bunch this summer, like Mean Girls, Little Mermaid, Moana Jr. Like, this will all be happening over the summer. These are camps that anybody can sign up for. There's no audition. There's no barrier for entry there. So great way to get involved. We also do after-school classes throughout the year, both for adults and for youth. Sometimes we go into schools and teach there in partnership with Charlotte-Mecklenburg School System. So that's another great way to have an introduction to the arts somehow, or to have an experience that exists beyond what they're getting in their schools.
Who's the longest tenured participant in DCP? I'm just wondering if there's somebody that started as a child and is there as an adult doing things.
Well, it's fascinating. I'll name some names here, but we just had a Zoom call with some of the original Connie Company kids who were thinking about getting together for a reunion. So folks who are now in their 60s and 70s. Meg Kimmel, who's been a wonderful DCP supporter over the years and worked in college communications, she was sort of the historian at our 60th anniversary gala last year, but was one of those, you know, younger folks and really started her directing career in the 70s with Davidson Community Players. So we have a pretty good track record, and we can kind of find for every age. Right now we've got a couple of alums who are on Broadway and Broadway shows as we speak. So sometimes they stick around the area, sometimes they soar and go somewhere else. Or they move careers entirely, but they use that theater skill set and that empathy that they learned to, you know, take them far.
All right, so with Rock of Ages, that'll be at the Kane Center in Cornelius, July 28th through August 1st. And as summer winds down, another rock and roll themed musical, going back maybe another generation or two, at the Kane Center again, Million Dollar Quartet, August 8th through 23rd.
That's right. So this is a new program for us. As I've mentioned, we've been producing a lot of our work at Kane Center for the Arts, but we've never really partnered with them on co-producing a show. Usually it's, you know, we rent and then we're responsible to do everything. Kane and DCP are getting together for this show, so we're sort of pooling resources, putting our heads together, being creative in all the marketing, and we're going to have this first ever DCP, Kane Center for the Arts, co-production. We thought Million Dollar Quartet would be perfect because I think Kane Center really thrives at having tribute concerts, cover bands. You know, if you have a favorite artist, you can kind of go out there and see a Beach Boys night or whatever it might be. So to see a musical that covers Jerry Lee Lewis, Carl Perkins, Johnny Cash, and Elvis Presley and all of their greatest hits with a theatrical premise to it, because this is a Broadway musical.
That checks a lot of boxes.
It's a perfect hybrid for our two organizations to really pilot, you know, what a co-production could look like.
And if I'm not mistaken, is your production of Evita the last one before it returns to Broadway?
That is a great question. I don't know if we I would say it's safe to say we're amongst the last, because we snuck in there with the rights availabilities. But it is coming back. It had a hugely acclaimed London West End production recently with Rachel Zegler, and that will be transferring to Broadway next summer.
Well, no need to fly to New York.
No.
You've got a lot going on.
More
right
affordable
here.
Tickets here, too.
Absolutely.
I promise you that.
Why mess with the TSA? If you haven't been going to see the Davidson Community Players productions, there are three opportunities right there we told you about. And you've got a few more scheduled for later in the year. Did you want to touch on those?
Sure, yeah. And it's good to remind everybody that we are not a summer stock theater. We're a 12 months out of the year operation. And I think my staff would love to have a break. But hey, we keep going. So we're doing a sort of Noel Coward-esque comedy in September called The Cottage at Armour Street Theater. It's a newer play, but it's very much written in that British farce style of a manners comedy from, you know, Noel Coward or anyone like that. That'll be hilarious, lots of hijinks, a bunch of couples getting together in the English countryside, and affairs ensue. We've joked about having our sponsors, Macintosh Law Firm, maybe get their divorce attorneys to be on site. So we'll see how that goes. So we'll have the cottage, and then we are wrapping up our main stage season at Kane Center again with Irving Berlin's White Christmas. And not a co-production, we'll just be using the venue for that, but audiences are really looking forward to a little heartwarming, you know, nostalgic musical over the holidays.
There's a classic right there. Yeah. Well, you can find out more about all of the shows we mentioned and even get tickets at davidsoncommunityplayers.org. My guest is the executive director of Davidson Community Players, Steve Kaliski. Thank you so much for stopping by.
Thank you for having me.
Before those shows hit the stage, there are a few other things happening across our region over the next week. Let's get right to it with fanfare. Let's start with something for the kids. The Children's Theater of Charlotte presents the SpongeBob Musical Youth Edition at the McCall Family Theater on Friday and Saturday. Based on the beloved animated series SpongeBob SquarePants, the citizens of Bikini Bottom discover a volcano's about to erupt, threatening the existence of their underwater world. Now, this isn't so much for the kids. The Great Smoky Mountains Railroad in Bryson City is serving up a new tasting experience called Bourbon Train Spirits on the Rail on Saturday, June 20th. As you wind through the beautiful scenery of Western North Carolina, you'll enjoy three bourbon cocktails paired with a chef-prepared four-course dinner, including a sweet orange scallop salad, braised beef short ribs, a bourbon-glazed peach bread pudding, and more. The Charlotte Symphony Orchestra has two free outdoor performances coming up over the next week, and they both include post-concert fireworks, weather permitting. You can catch the CSO at Bailey Road Park in Cornelius on Saturday at 6 p.m. and at Pineville Lake Park in Pineville on Thursday, June 25th at 8:30. The next installment of the Charlotte Symphony Orchestra's Summer Pop Series pays tribute to the sounds of the big screen with Hollywood Hits at Symphony Park on Sunday at 8:15. It's the perfect Father's Day concert with blockbuster movie scores by composers such as John Williams and others. Gates open at 5 p.m. and the prelude performance by Wilmington, North Carolina Americana duo Courtney Lynn and Quinn starts at 7. The Brevard Music Center's 90th season is underway with some exciting performances over the next week, including the Ballard Day Quartet on Tuesday, June 23rd, with a program featuring works by Amy Beach and Johannes Brahms. Then members of the BMC artist faculty perform World of Schumann, with music by Robert and Clara Schumann, as well as Johannes Brahms, on Wednesday the 24th. And there's opera, too, with Mozart's The Marriage of Figaro on Thursday, June 25th. University of North Carolina School of the Arts is launching the inaugural North Carolina Piano Festival at Watson Hall in Winston-Salem, June 25th through July 10th. The three-week event will feature internationally acclaimed guest artists William Wolfram and Arthur Green, distinguished faculty performers, and rising young pianists from across the country performing works by Bach, Beethoven, Chopin, Liszt, Mozart, and Schumann. All performances are free and open to the public. Juneteenth Rock Hill and the Boonerang Music and Arts Festival in downtown Boone are also happening this weekend. Get the details on those events and see even more on my complete fanfare column at WDAV.org. And fanfare is made possible in part by Bragg Financial. Piedmont Opera is presenting a concert called African Queens on June 18th in Winston-Salem. Rachel Stewart had a chance to speak with the production's curator and performer.
Soprano Karen Slack is one of opera's most sought-after voices. She's performed on the stages of the Metropolitan Opera, Lyric Opera of Chicago, Washington National Opera, San Francisco Opera, and others, as well as at the Aspen Music Festival, Tanglewood Music Festival, Newport Classical Festival, etc. And in 2019, she originated the role of Billy in Terrence Blanchard's Fire Shut Up in My Bones. In 2025, she and Michelle Kahn won a Grammy for Best Classical Solo Vocal Album for their recording of Florence Price's unpublished art songs. And this year, she's been on a nationwide tour with her critically acclaimed African Queens, a recital of art songs celebrating the legacy and history of seven African queens. In conjunction with Piedmont Opera, she is bringing this unique performance to Winston-Salem's First Baptist on 5th, June 18th, and she joins us to talk about it. So welcome to Piedmont Arts, Karen.
Thank you so much, Rachel. Thank you for having me.
Can you talk a little bit about what gave you the idea and inspiration for this recital for African Queens?
It has been something that I have been dreaming about for, I would say, almost 10 years. people don't realize how many years it takes to put together an idea and have it be successful. In 2022-23, I was getting really frustrated around the idea of what stories were being told and new works. And I had the opportunity to kind of pivot in my career a bit to go away from opera, as much heavy opera, and more into chamber music and curating and recitals and concerts. African Queens is kind of like my big baby that I birthed, you know, literally from the ground up. I talk about the frustration of new works and women's representation in them. Oftentimes you're just someone's mom or their sister or their wife, and the characters are always there to support the men. And the women's stories just are never fully fleshed out and told. So I really wanted to create something that celebrated women who did extraordinary things. A lot of people don't know the stories of the African queens. And actually, they don't even know that the queens are the ones, not the kings, who were the rulers and made a lot of the decisions in the African culture. It's still very much so that the women are the head, are the neck, as they say in the, you know. Anyway, but yes, so that was just my idea. And then during pandemic, I created a talk show titled Kiki Conversations, and I had various interviews that I'd done, and I asked my dear friend Terrence Blanchard to moderate a panel for me of seven of today's young African-American composers, seven of the hottest composers that I thought. Some were my friends and some weren't. After the conversation, they approached me about maybe writing a piece for me. And I said, I have a better idea. Get everybody on a Zoom. And I wanted to, and I pitched them the idea of African Queens as a song, an evening of song.
So it's been around for a couple of years. It's been in the works for longer than that. So where did you get the stories of these women that the songs are about?
Originally, again, my first idea many years ago was to tell the story of the Nigerian Aba War, the Women's War of 1921. And so as I was researching that with the former collaborator that I had on that project, I started to hear all these stories of all of these women throughout history in Nigeria, in Nubia, and all of this, all the culture. You know, of course, we know a little bit from Aida, of course, as has having been an Aida for most of my career. But I would say the pebbles lead to the big stones. And so I just started exploring what the stories that were on the continent. And I bought on a young librettist / countertenor who I know through Facebook, and he dropped a poem one day, and I happened to read his post, and I also pitched him the idea to come on as a creative consultant with me to gather these stories. I'd had a few, but we, and of course, everyone knows Cleopatra, right? Everyone knows, you know, those kind of, maybe some know Nzinga, Queen Nzinga, but, you know, I started gathering these stories and deciding which queens that I wanted to choose. And so we picked about 25 of them, presented them to the composers. Some of them chose from the list. Some chose, like Shon Okpebolo chose his great-great-great-grandmother, who was Queen Ufua. I think he's the most personal story. And then Joel Thompson chose Queen Nani because he is of Jamaican descent. Queen Nani was Queen Nani of the Maroons in Jamaica. So
did they do the libretto as well as the music, or was that your librettist friend?
Yes. So J. St. Flono, who is the creative consultant for the project, he put together some poems and some text, but most of them, as composers do, they love to work with their collaborators. Some of them worked with their own librettist that they work with in opera. Two composers used Jay's text. And I believe that Joel wrote his own text, although there's a name of a woman that he has on the space where you put the librettist on the score, but I cannot find this woman. So I think it might be an alias. I should ask him, but I think Kevin Miller, who's the pianist on the project, we think that it's Joel's alias.
Well, we don't have a ton of time, but I wonder, well, first of all, as I understand it, the recital is, of course, you performing these songs, but you give a little bit of context around them before you sing them, or
there's a couple of spoken parts in some of the songs. There's some spoken poetry that links each piece together. I didn't want the recital to be some kind of dissertation style or a school project. I wanted it to have the highest artistic quality, and it's not a dig to anybody in academia whatsoever, but it's just, you know, artistically sometimes these grand pieces can veer to trying to like educate people, and I wanted that, but I also wanted the music and the stories and the narratives that we put together to lead.
You have essentially expanded the repertoire of art song. And I wonder, what is it like for you to sing this music that you've had a hand in creating versus, say, another type of recital where you're singing standard repertoire? Does it feel different?
It does feel different. It feels still feels surreal. It still feels new and fresh every time that I come to it, I have to say. I still feel like, oh my God, do I know the notes? Oh my God, do I know what I'm doing? Because it is still so new. And also, I think I'm too close to it. It's my baby. So the investment is always much more as to singing a whole recital of Schubert or Brahms or Strauss, where I feel like you're always chasing the ghost, because we can listen to hundreds of recordings of that repertoire, which we all love. That's the entry point to classical music, is through Puccini and Strauss and Brahms and, you know, and Schubert and all those guys. So, but when you have the new canon, you get to set the tone, you get to set the table in a way. And then the next person who sings it, you hope that they feel empowered to create the world that they want to present. That's for me, that's the most important part, is that, you know, I've always feel like I'm having to, when I sing Aida, have to sing Leontine Price's High C, and that will never happen. It will never happen, you know, but it's always in the back of your mind, you know, the greats, and you want to at least be able to touch the hem of the greatness, but it holds you back. It does really hold you back from becoming fully the artist that you want to be in, and telling the story in the manner that you want to tell it. So I love the new canon, and I love the new works, and I'm grateful that composers want to write for me, and that they want to be a part of expanding the vocal canon for the next generation.
That is so interesting that you say that you're chasing a ghost when you're singing the older stuff.
I do feel like that. We don't talk about that kind of stuff enough, you know?
Yeah. Well, do you have other singers who are going to take this repertoire that you know about and perform it their way?
I don't know yet, because we have a little thing called exclusivity, and so I think I have a couple more months. It's been about 2 years of a couple more months before the baby goes out into the world. We just recorded the recital. We just finished the recording actually last week. So hopefully it'll be out this year. And once the recording is out and the exclusivity is up around the recital, it is for the girls to take and do what they wish with it. And I've already had quite a few sopranos ask me for the music, you know, but I said, nope, not until it's recorded.
Do you, when it goes out into the world, do you want it to go out like as a complete, keep it as the African Queens, perform them all together? Or are you happy for people to say, take Jesse Montgomery's piece and incorporate it into their recital, or, you know, Sean of Pueblo's piece?
I would prefer them to take it and program the pieces so that they tell their own story, because I would love to see another soprano's vision, or another, you know, mezzo, whoever decides to take it, or men may want to sing, you know, the pieces. And also it supports the work that I do, because the more people hear these pieces, the more people go, Karen Slack curated that, let's see what else she has, you know. And you know, and it also supports that, you know, my own advocacy of the kind of work that I do, the more people sing it. So I hope that they They do. But after the recording drops.
Gotcha. Just one last question, talking about sort of taking it to the next place. I read that you have an orchestrated version now. It's, you know, it's just been you and the piano, but there's an orchestrated version. Is that right?
Yes, there sure is. And it is basically just the 7 new pieces created into a suite. It's very cinematic. It is stunningly beautiful. And I tell you, I'm not saying it just because it's my baby. It is so beautiful. And I cannot wait. Next year, next season, it will have more performances. And, you know, there's another part. When I did this at with Washington Performing Arts, they helped me build a visual part. So the Queens has, the recital has visuals as well, which I hope more people get to see. It just elevates the storytelling in a whole other way. And that's for the vocal piano version. It's so delicious. And I hope, again, people, more sopranos and more orchestras program that as well.
Good luck with it. It sounds like it's been really successful this year, because it's mostly this year that you've been performing it around the country, right?
Yes.
Well, good luck with it all. And Karen Slack is bringing African Queens to our region. She'll be performing in Winston-Salem at Winston-Salem's First Baptist on 5th on June 18th. Karen, it's been great to talk to you.
You as well, Rachel. And I want to say one more little teeny thing.
Okay.
I want to thank my dear friend, Joe Mekovich, who is now the new general director, I think, of Piedmont.
He is, yeah.
And he has been someone who was so supportive of me from the beginning of us working together. And, you know, he got his new appointment and he called me and said, I want to bring African Queens there. So I am so grateful. I'm grateful to Joe. I'm grateful to Piedmont Opera. I plan on giving you all a show as my thank you and my love for the art, for the community, and for Joe inviting me. So.
All right. Well, we look forward to you being here.
Thank you.
Karen Slack's African Queens will be on Thursday, June 18th at First Baptist on 5th in Winston-Salem. More information at piedmontopera.org. And that's our episode. You can hear past interviews and subscribe to Piedmont Arts so you'll always get our freshest content as soon as it becomes available by going to wdav.org/podcasts, Apple Podcasts, or iHeart Podcasts. For Piedmont Arts and Rachel Stewart, I'm Phil Vavra. Thanks for listening.